Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, that's 27a, and we are on the second line from the top, the third word in. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShuva Foundation. We were discussing the very end of our previous Mishnah, and that Mishnah is found on page Chaf Dalet Amud Bet, and it said there that the Sudat Havra, the meal that the mourner eats when they come back from the cemetery, should be eaten on a mitah kfuya, an overturned bed. Sorry, the opposite, on an upright bed. That the comforters should sit on an upright bed, and the mourners presumably should eat while sitting on the floor. So since we're talking about that, we begin a conversation about a halakha. It's one of the halakhot that we no longer practice, and we'll discuss that, which is the halakha of kfiyat hamita, overturning one's bed. The halakha is that as soon as you become a mourner, you are supposed to overturn your beds so that you cannot sleep on them. Now, their beds were a little different than ours. We discussed it earlier in the Masechta, that they were more like what do you call those things? Hammocks. They were almost like hammocks, and you would undo the ropes so that the beds would fall on the floor. So it was kind of like an act of destruction. Some people argue that their beds were just like our beds, that they were just kind of mattresses, and you could just flip them over, whereas our beds have headboards and posts, and it's difficult to flip them over. But the reason it gives in the Shulchan Aruch is that this behavior of flipping the beds was seen at a certain time in history as an act of witchcraft, and people were suspected of doing magic or something like that. And so the custom passed away from the Jewish people. And even though people probably wouldn't suspect us of doing witchcraft anymore, once the custom passed away from the Jewish people, it has not come back. The question is whether or not there are still certain aspects of kfiyat hamita that still apply to us. As we'll see, it's possible that there are. Let's start with the discussion. Second line down. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, me'ematai kofinat hamitot. When do we overturn the beds? Now, interestingly, this is a very fundamental question, because really the question here is, when does mourning begin? And even though it only specifies this particular act of mourning, the overturning of the beds, the same thing would apply to taking off one's shoes, covering one's head, doing all the other aspects of mourning, presumably. Unless, and another way of reading it, is that this is a unique din, that the din of overturning the bed is separate. So there's two ways of reading it. Either it is one mentioned example of avilut, but it applies to all the other nihuge avilut as well, or it's a unique din. Rabbi Soloveitchik viewed it as a unique din, and we'll see why that helps or how that works with his description later. He mentions two specific things about it. One is that this is basically the only one of the mourning practices that's not learned from Yechezkel. All the other ones are learned from the book of Ezekiel, and this one is not. And also, Rabbi Soloveitchik views this as a din in the house of the Avel, not in the person of the Avel. Just as we saw earlier that tearing kriya is in the beged, in the clothing of the Avel, this is a act that is in the house of the Avel, and that sets it apart from all the other mourning activities, which are about the person of the mourner. And he's going to prove that later, as we'll see in a little bit, that you have to turn over all the beds in the house, not just the bed that the mourner sleeps on. There are some people that disagree with this. The Rimi Lunel says that the reason we turn over all the beds is because any bed that the mourner could sleep on has to be turned over, and so it really isn't the person of the Avel. But the Rav viewed it as a din in the house, not in the mourner himself. So in that case, this may apply specifically to turning over the beds, but not to all the other aspects of mourning. In any case, the truth is, the discussion about when mourning starts is related to this teaching. So when do we turn over the beds? Mishiyatza mi petach beito divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that a person can turn over the beds. In other words, the mourning begins as soon as you go out of the house. In other words, even before the burial is complete. Rabbi Yeshua says, Mishe Yisatem HaGolel. when the grave is sealed. As we mentioned earlier, they used to bury people in caves. So there was a large rock, a round rock, that could be moved over the mouth of the cave. And so it was when they sealed the cave entrance, that's called Yisatem HaGolel, and that was when mourning started. But we apply that to any way in which a grave is sealed. So in our situation, usually it would be when you put earth on top of the coffin so that the coffin is covered. That would be considered when the kavura is complete. In b'di'evet circumstances, like in situations of war or where you're unable to bury someone, there are tshuvas where they were lenient to allow even the closing of the coffin to count as stimat hagolel, even if they weren't able to bury them yet. But that's only in a b'di'evet situation. Okay, ma'ase, there was a certain story. Shemait Rabbi Gamliel Hazakein, Rabbi Gamliel the elder, passed away. Kevin sheyatza mipetach beito, when he went out, when they took his body out of the house, Amar lahem Rabbi Eliezer, kafu mitotechem. Rabbi Eliezer told those who were in the house to turn over the beds. V'kevan shenistam hagolel, when they then closed the grave, Amar lahem Rabbi Yoshua, kafu mitotechem. Then Rabbi Yoshua told them that they should overturn the beds. Amrulo, they said to him, kfar kafinu al pizakein. We already got a psak that we should overturn the beds earlier, and we did so. So we can see here that there was such a machlokes. The only reason Rabbi Eliezer got in there is because his position is to do it earlier. It's not clear which way we paskin by from this Gemara. Okay, going on. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Me'ematai zokfin et hamitot be'erev Shabbat. When do we take the overturned beds and reassemble them on Erev Shabbat? Because since there's no public mourning on Shabbat, we're considering this to be a public mourning, even though it's one's bed. So before Shabbat begins, you're going to turn the bed back upright. So the answer is mina mincha ulamala, from mincha time and onwards. It is unclear, and Tosfot asks the question, is this mincha gedola, which is just after midday, or is it mincha katana, which is already much closer to Shabbat? Mistama, it should be mincha katana, it should be much closer to Shabbat. Because that's already the time when you can light Shabbat candles, and one could argue that it's almost Shabbat. On the other hand, if we're arguing here that you can put up the bed as a set unique din earlier than the other Nihugei Avelut, already by the time of Mincha Katana, a person can change their clothes and go take a shower. So perhaps this is earlier than those observances. Amar Rabba Bar Huna, even though he can overturn the bed from mincha, eno yosheva leha ad shetachshach, he may not sit upon it. This is not just a bed, it serves as a couch as well, until it gets dark. Ulamote Shabbat, and on when Shabbat is over, afal pi she'ein lo leshev ela yom echad, even though he's only going to sit on it one more day. In other words, let's say he's getting up from Shiva Sunday morning, Chozer v'kofeh, he should still push it over Saturday night, which I think is obvious, meaning if you're still sleeping on it Saturday night, of course you have to, I mean, if you still have to mourn over Saturday night and still Shiva, of course you have to push your bed back over, unless you're arguing that once you did it already, you don't have to do it again. Anyway, it's a question. There's a discussion in the Rishonim about it. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, we're in the last skinny line. Hakofeh mitato, if one turns over their bed, lo mitato bilvad hu kofeh, it's not only his bed that he should turn over, ela kol mitot sheyesh lo betoch beito hu kofeh, but all the beds that are in his house he should turn over. Vafilo yesh lo eser mitot ba'asara mikomot, even if he has 10 beds in 10 different places, kofeh kulan, he should turn them all over. Obviously he's not going to sleep in 10 different beds, but the idea is that he has to turn them all over. Now this brings up, again, what Rabbi Soloveitchik said, that it's a din in the house, not in the mourner. Even though he's not going to be sleeping on all of them, since it's in the house, all the beds in the house have to be turned over. In addition, the Rav argued that there are two aspects to Kfiyat Amita. One is the turning over of the bed itself, and the second aspect, as we'll see in a minute, is the sleeping on the floor. So those two things have to go together, but the one that is related to the house is the turning over the bed, and then the question of where the mourner sleeps is the question for the mourner himself. Anyway, the teaching continues. Vafila chamisha achin umet achad. Even if there are five brothers and one of them dies, kulan kofin. All of them have to turn over their beds. However, v'im hayta mita miyuchedet lekelim. If there is a bed that is specifically for vessels, you put stuff on it, but you don't sit or sleep on it. Ein tzarich lekafuta. That does not count as a bed, and it does not have to be turned over. Okay, let's keep going. The next section, we're on the fourth wide line, is a little bit of a digression about a particular piece of furniture that we don't know exactly what it is. There's actually quite a problem in figuring out what it is. It's called a dargash. And it is an intermediate kind of bed. We're not sure if it counts as the kind of bed that you sleep on or the kind of bed that holds kelim. So dargash, ein sarich lekafoto, you do not need to overturn it the way you need to overturn a bed. Ella zokfo, but you must stand it up. Now, this use of the word zokfo seems to be different from the way we used it before. Usually we have kfiat amita and zikifat amita. It's either overturned or it's upright. This seems to be that even though you don't collapse it, you push it up on its side. So it's not in its normal position. It's sort of like stacked up against the wall. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Dargash, he disagrees with the Tanakhama, who says that you don't have to collapse it, but you stand it up against the wall. He says, Dargash, matir et karbitav, you loosen its ropes, vuhu nofel me'elav, and then it collapses on its own. In other words, you indirectly cause it to collapse, but you don't directly overturn it. Here we see that a dargash is something that has ropes, suspended ropes that are holding it up. At least that's what it seems like. My dargash, what is a dargash? Amar Ula, Ula said, Arsa Tagada, it is a chair of good luck. I do not know what this is, and I don't think we have such things. It was some kind. It sounds to me almost like it should be usser to have some kind of good luck chair in your home. What we might have in our homes are ornamental chairs, chairs that are beautiful or antique, but you don't sit in them. Or sleep on them, or couches that you're not really supposed to sit on. Alternatively, this could be the kind of chair that you don't use except for, let's say, for a Brit Milah or for a special occasion or something like that. Although Rashi says that they don't sit on it. Ein mishtamshim baklum. He says you don't use it at all. It's just ornamental. Okay, now if it's ornamental, there's no risk that you're going to sit or sleep on it. The mourner wouldn't do that, so it's unclear if it needs to be collapsed. Amar le Rabba, Rabba said, Elameyata, if that's true that it is a chair of good luck, Gabe Melech, then we have a teaching related to a chair of good luck, related to a king. Ditnan, as it said in a Mishnah, in Nedarim, Kola am Misubim ala Aretz, the whole, this is the Sudas Havra for a king, the mourner's meal. The whole people sit on the ground, Vuhu Mesev ala Dargash, and he sits on the good luck chair. Mi ika mide da ad ha'idna, Lo utvine, are you telling me, or who would think, that until this point he never sits on a good luck chair? V'hashta motvinenle, and now the mourner's going to go sit on a good luck chair? Why would you do that right after you buried your dead relative? As a mourner, you're not going to sit in a good luck chair at this time. It doesn't make sense. Matkifla Ravashi. Ravashi attacks this question. My kusha midi. What kind of question is this? My kusha, what's the question? Midi dehava achila ushtia. Let's apply the same logic to eating and drinking. Da'ada idna lo ochline velo ashkine. Ordinarily, we don't bring food and drink to a mourner. They feed and drink themselves. Hashda ochline vashkine. But here for the Sudas Havra, we're bringing them special food. So obviously, some things are different. Just like we bring them special food for the Suda, maybe they sit in a special chair for the Suda. That's what Ravashi says. Ela ikasha hakasha. But if you want to ask a question, ask this question. It says in our Gemara ditnan, and it should be amended to ditanya. The difference between tnan, it refers to a teaching from a Mishnah, which is a specific work by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And tanya refers to a braita, which is additional material that's very similar to a Mishnah, but collected in a braita instead of in a Mishnah. Okay, ditanya, as we learn in a braita, dargash Eino tzarich lekafoto ele zokfo. We learned that a dargash doesn't have to be turned over, but it can be stood up against the wall. Ve'i arsa degada, and if it's a good luck chair, amai eino tzarich lekafoto, then why don't you need to collapse it? Why shouldn't you have to collapse it? Ha Tanya, did we not learn in a brayta? Ha kofe mitato, lo mitato bilvad hu kofe. As we learned, you don't only have to turn over the bed that you're going to sleep on. Ela kol mitot sheyesh lo b'toch beito kofe. But all the houses in all the chairs and beds in the house, you have to turn over. So if a dargash is a bed in the house, even if the mourner's not going to sleep on it, mistama, probably, you'd have to turn it over, because it's not about whether or not the mourner's going to sleep on it. It is a separate ritual act of overturning any bed that could be slept or sat on. So but they attack this objection. Umay kasha, what's the problem? Mididahava amita hamyuchedet lekelim. Let's say the dargash is like a bed that is separate, that is set aside for vessels, and we said those vessels don't need to be collapsed. In other words, every bed in the house needs to be overturned, but only beds that are slept on. If it is a bed that is specifically for kelim, it doesn't have to be overturned. And let's say a dargash, which is never sat or slept on, would be more like a mitah for kelim than a regular mitah. Ditanya, as we learn in a braita, imaita mitah miuchedet lekelim. If you have a bed that is set aside to put things on, eino tzarich lekafota. You do not need to overturn it. Ela ikasha hakasha. So if we've now demolished two of the questions against the dargash. The first one was, we said, if it's really a good luck chair, why would you ever sit on it? Well, we're like, well, things are a little different when a mourner comes back, just like they're different with eating and drinking, maybe they're different with sitting as well. And the second objection, which was that it should be like any other bed in the house, and even though the mourner's not going to sit on it, it should still be demolished. We say, no, it should be like a bed that is set aside for kelim. Ela ikasha hakasha. Instead, let's ask a third question. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Dargash Matir Kar Bitav, Vuhuno Nofel Me'elav. According to Rashbag, you don't collapse it, but you loosen its cords so that it falls down all by itself. V'i Salka Datach Arsa Degada, and if you were to think that this is a good luck chair, my karbitin itle, why would it have ropes? That's not what a good luck chair has. A good luck chair doesn't have cords. Ki'ata Ravin, so apparently we still don't know exactly what a dargash is. Ki'ata Ravin, when Ravin came, Ravin would travel between Israel and Babylonia and bring teachings with him. Amar Lei, he said, Hahu Merabanan, there's a certain rabbi, V'rach Taflicha Bar Ma'arava Shmei, and his name was Tachlifa, the son of the Israelite. Ma'arava in Bavel means the west. So if you were in Babylonia, which is Iraq, Israel was to the west, so they called them Westerners. Now we call them the Middle East, but they called them Westerners. Bar Ma'arava Shmei, so his name was Rav Tachlifa. Dahavishchiach Bishuka de Gildai, and he was a regular patron in the leather workers market. And he had some familiarity with this object. My dargash, what is a dargash? Arsa ditzila. It's a leather chair or a leather bed. The Gra takes out the next two words, itmarnami, he omits them, and says, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, dargash, this leather chair, sirugo mitocho. It's the way in which the cords are looped through it are different. They are interwoven into the frame of the bed itself. Mita, whereas a regular bed, siruga al-gaba, is interwoven underneath it, which is a pretty minor difference. Even if you saw a picture, you wouldn't see such a big difference. Amar Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha said in the name of Yoshua ben Levi, Halacha krim shimim gamliel, and we do pask in this way, that if it was for a darga, you unloosen its cords and it falls down by itself. Itmar Nami, we have a similar teaching. Amar Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha, Amar Rabbi Asi, Mita shenakliteha yotzin, a mita that has a canopy that goes up. So in other words, like a two or four poster bed in which you would hang a net that would protect you from flies and mosquitoes and possibly from the sun. Zokva v'dayo, what you do is you push it over on its side, and that is enough. So here too, he would seem to posken against Rabbi Gamliel, that just like he said with a dargash, you should just push it up. The Tanakhama says you just push it up against the wall, and that would be enough. So at the end of the day, we don't really know what a dargash is. It could be a ceremonial chair. It could be something like a tray table, like something that you set up in a living room, and it has some fabric on it that was used kind of like as a guest chair. It could be something like a leather cot that was like a, or like a hammock, but not a hammock that you hang from the walls, like a hammock that stands alone. Or it could be something that was very similar to a bed, but not used as a bed. Anyway, we don't know exactly what it is. So we continue on in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Yashen al gabe kisei, if the mourner slept on a chair, al gabe udyane gedola, udyane, or on some kind of an overturned vessel, that does not sound comfortable, but it's not on the floor, or gedola mizu, even more than this, al gabe karka, if he slept on the floor, lo yatza yidei chovato, he has not fulfilled his obligation. Which obligation? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shelo kiyem kfiat hamita, he did not fulfill kfiat hamita. In other words, and this is how Rabbi Soloveitchik reads it, there are two aspects to kfiat hamita. One is the act of overturning the bed, and the second is the act of sleeping on the floor. So while nothing is wrong with sleeping on the floor, in fact, the mourner should sleep on the floor, but if he didn't actually overturn the beds, he has not fulfilled his obligation. So before we go on, I'll just mention that since the Rav argues that Kfiat HaMitah is a separate obligation that is inheres in the house of the mourner and not the body of the mourner, and since you have to do Kfiat HaMitah as well as sleeping on the floor, the question is, do both exist anymore? So we said that as far as sleeping on the floor, that minhag should still exist. And we paskin that a mourner should sleep on the floor. However, lemaisa, the minhag is to be lenient on this. And the argument is that we're allowed to sleep on our beds because our beds are difficult to turn over. However, it certainly is possible for someone to flip their mattress over. It's just that one side of the mattress is the same as the other side of the mattress. Similarly, one could flip their pillow over, but as the Pnei Baruch mentions, Rabbi Akiva Eger suggests it, but the flipping the pillow over, it's the same on both sides as well. What you could do is take the mattress off of your bed and put it on the floor, and that seems a very reasonable way of acting as a mourner, but apparently the minhag is not to do that. What I didn't see in any of the Sfarim, but I have heard that mourners do, is to just take away your pillows, to sleep on your bed without any pillows, and that's a way of fulfilling Kfiat HaMitah. In addition, during the daytime, as we know, mourners are supposed to sit on the floor, because since you've overturned all the beds, there's nothing to sit on. That's the custom of the Sfaradim. The Ashkenazim, of course, have the custom of either sitting on a low stool, either an overturned box, which you can get from the funeral parlor, or nowadays, of course, they make these low chairs, even ones that are, you know, leather and nicely padded and kind of comfortable, but are within 3 tefachim of the floor, that you can sit low down to the floor. So that's as far as sleeping and sitting on the ground. But what about as far as overturning the beds? Clearly, we do not do it. It's not our custom to do it. So Rabbi Soloveitchik argues, however, that there is another custom that is the same idea as overturning the beds, and that's covering the mirrors. And he bases that on a Gemara that we had earlier on Daf Tetvav, the very bottom of Tetvav Amud Aleph, going into Tetvav Amud Bet, where the Gemara says that the idea of Kfiat HaMitah is that when someone dies, we are kofed di yukanan shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, the tselem Elohim of a person is taken out of this world. And so Kfiat HaMitah is the act of flipping over the bed, just the way that the image of God was flipped over from existence to non-existence, something like that. So that there is an idea of that the act of Kfiat HaMitah is meant to show that a person's tselem Elohim was taken away. So the Rav argues that the same thing is true of a mirror. When you look at a person in the mirror, you see, so to speak, a human being. That's the Tzelem Elohim. And so by covering the mirror so you cannot see your reflection, it evokes the same idea as flipping the bed over, which was meant to suggest the idea of suppressing the Tzelem Elohim. Whether or not you find that convincing or not, that is his argument. And it makes an internal logic. There are some other explanations given for why we cover mirrors. Some argue that it's a din in shul, that synagogues are not supposed to have mirrors, and so if you're davening in a mourner's house, that's why you would cover the mirrors, because it's turning into a temporary shul. The Kolbo gives two other explanations. He says that one is because people seeing each other's reflections brings a certain amount of simcha to them. Or I would argue that it's more like people are looking in it to make themselves look beautiful, or to be, they're gazing at themselves in a sort of like, they're focusing on non-spiritual matters, they're focusing on physical matters when you look in a mirror. So he also argues that by looking at other people and by seeing their images, it might bring lustful thoughts to mind. And since an avel is aser and tashmish amita, better to cover the mirrors so that people can't look at each other's reflections. Okay, we're just going to do a little more down to the Mishnah. We'll finish up this last section. We are 2, 4, 5 lines up from the Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Mechabdinu marbitzin bevet ha'avel. One is allowed to sweep and to put down water. These were dirt floors to keep the dust down in the house of an avel. Umadichin kearot v'kosot utzluchiot v'kitonot bevet ha'avel. And you can wash bowls and cups and plates and pitchers in the house of an avel. In other words, you can do the dishes. But you shouldn't bring incense and fragrances into the house of the avel. We don't do this anymore. Apparently, it was a custom in the time of the Talmud. It mentions it related to Hilchot Seuda of bringing incenses into the house. But you shouldn't make the house smell fragrant in the house of an avel. It's not appropriate for mourning. Ini, is this really true? V'hatani bar kapara, ein mevarchin lo ala mugmar v'lo ala besamim. You don't make a blessing on the incense or perfume, or on the good smelling besamim bevet ha'avel, in the house of the avel. Beruche hu d'lo mevarchin. So the halacha is that you don't make a bracha on it. Ha'atuye maitinan. But as far as bringing it, it seems like it's permitted to bring it. So we have a contradiction between one source which says you shouldn't bring mugmar and besamim to the house of the avel at all, and one says that you could bring it, you just can't make a bracha on it. Lo kasha, this is not a problem. We'll harmonize the two of them. They're dealing with two different circumstances. Ha bevet ha'avel, one is talking about the house of the avel. Ha bevet ha-menachamin, and one is talking about the house of the consolers. What this means is a little ambiguous. Let's give two possible interpretations. One is that we're talking about two different rooms in the house. In other words, where the mourners themselves are, you shouldn't bring incense and fragrances in. But in a place where only the comforters who are coming to pay a shiva call go, there you can have it. A second way of looking at it is that it's only true when the body is still there. But after the body is no longer in the house and the body is buried, then you can bring them. Alternatively, sometimes, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, the mourner, even though they're sitting Shiva in one house, they may go next door to sleep. So it could be that the Beit HaAvel is a place where they're sleeping, and in that place you shouldn't bring fragrances, but in the place where they're actually sitting Shiva and receiving comforters, they may be able to. That brings us down to the Mishnah. A long recording today. We'll stop there. Have a wonderful day.